We begin today with a potentially groundbreaking lawsuit about social media addiction. Australia is now world famous for its legislative approach to banning social media for under 16s. And while the jury's still out on the effectiveness of that, in America, the jury is about to go in. Jury selection began in the Superior Court of California this week in a claim that accuses social media services of negligence and failure to warn about the addictive properties of social media. Matthew Bergman is the founding attorney of the Social Media Victims Law Center, which acts for the plaintiff in this case. And the case argues that social media services are addictive by design. Matthew Bergman, welcome to Sunday Extra.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
This case centers on someone known by the initials KGM. What can you tell us about them and the nature of the claim being brought on their behalf?
KGM is a young woman who got on social media at a very early age, became addicted to social media and developed a series of very significant and severe mental health harms that continue, unfortunately, to challenge her to this very day. Her case is not unique. It is unfortunately representative of so many young people in the United States and UK and Australia who suffer addiction and abuse through social media. Her case was specifically selected by the court because it was representative of so many other cases that have befallen children throughout the world.
Who are the defendants in the case?
The defendants currently are Meta for Instagram and Google for YouTube.
Is that because some other social media services have settled?
Two of the defendants have resolved for under confidential terms. That is correct.
Does making a claim about a number of social media services make it harder to prove that any one of them actually caused the harms that KGM alleges?
Not necessarily. We have a burden of proof that we embrace as the plaintiff to show that each platform was a substantial factor in causing our clients harm. And what we see so often with young people is that they use the platforms interchangeably and that they all contribute to the harms. There are very few young people who only use one platform exclusively.
Time magazine has said that you personally have promoted and deployed a pioneering strategy to circumvent Section 230. So for the benefit of Australian listeners, could you explain what Section 230 is and what your strategy for circumventing it is?
Section 230 was a law that was passed in 1996 when the largest browser was Netscape, Google didn't exist, and Mark Zuckerberg was in junior high school. It protects a internet service provider from liability for third-party content that's hosted on its platform. It was enacted at the infancy of the internet revolution and has been surpassed by current events. Unfortunately, it was broadly interpreted by U.S. courts to provide carte blanche immunity to social media companies for virtually anything that they did that in any way was related to third-party content, which we know is everything that goes on social media. We developed a different approach, focusing not on the content of the material that is hosted by the social media platform, but rather its design, showing that the design is defective by nature, that it is intentionally designed to be addictive, that they maximize engagement of young people and the corresponding ad revenue by showing kids not what they want to see, but what they can't look away from.
So what are the design elements that you're focusing on in the case against Meta and Google?
There are a number of them. The infinite scroll, the like feature, the for you feature, the recommendations, the streaks, some of the other features that gamify the social media platforms and encourage kids against their better judgment and indeed against their desire to engage when they know that they really don't even want to be engaging.
Do you have to prove that they were intended to be addictive?
We don't need to prove that, although we believe the evidence is going to show that their own documents use the word addiction. We have to show that they were negligent, that they failed to use reasonable care. Basically, that they failed to follow the golden rule that every other company has to follow and all of us as citizens of the world have to follow.
Social media addiction is certainly a commonly used phrase these days, but does it need to be a recognized medical category in order for this case to succeed? And is it a recognized medical category?
Well, it is a recognized phenomenon. It is noted in the peer-reviewed literature. There's the Bergen Social Media Addiction Scale, which is used throughout the psychological literature to measure addiction of social media. There is evidence emerging that social media has a neurologic impact on young people's brains, that the brain develops differently on the basis of the frequency of social media use that a young person has. We believe the evidence is going to show that it is both psychologically and medically tantamount to an addiction in the same manner that tobacco is addictive.
Who from Meta and Google is likely to be called to give evidence in this KGM case?
The judge has required that the senior executives come and testify, and we imagine that they will, and we expect that they will be there.
What's the process for this case from here, Matthew? How long is it likely to take for it to be determined?
Well, we're in the process of jury selection. It's important to ensure that the jury that hears this case be fair and impartial, be able to listen to both sides and render a decision based on the evidence, not based on their personal prejudices or predilections, and that the jury be able to listen to the law as instructed by the judge and follow that law, whether they agree with it or not. And that is a process, particularly in a case that, such as this one, that is fairly long in duration. So for the next several days, we'll be engaged in jury selection, in the process of ensuring that the jury that hears this case, as I said, be fair and impartial and able to render justice in this matter. At the conclusion of jury selection, the parties will provide opening statements. Then the plaintiffs will put on their witnesses, and the defendants will have an opportunity to cross-examine those witnesses. And then the defendants will put on their case, and the plaintiffs will have an opportunity to cross-examine their witnesses. And then there's a then each side renders a closing argument, and then the jury deliberates, decides whether or not the companies were negligent, whether that negligence caused KGM's harms, and if so, what the appropriate measure of damages should be.
Matthew Bergman, I've read that the Social Media Victims Law Center has thousands, maybe around 4,000 clients in this area of law. Could you give us a broader sense of the range of cases that are currently being litigated against social media services? Are they all in the nature of negligence claims like this one?
They all rely on a similar negligence and product liability theory that these products, these platforms are products, and that they are dangerous as designed, particularly when used by young people, and that these companies had a duty to warn kids and their parents of the clear and present danger that these platforms posed to young people. The harms vary. We have a significant number of cases where children have taken their lives after being subjected to suicidal content on these platforms, encouraging them to do so. Other children have passed away engaging in dangerous challenges and dangerous behaviors that have been promoted on social media, such as subway surfing or choking themselves or other horrific acts. There are a significant number of cases where children have developed eating disorders after receiving and being persuaded by and influenced by anorexic material that they see. In other cases where children have been sexually abused, either virtually by being encouraged to expose themselves in a compromising way or encouraged to meet up with predatory adults and then suffered severe physical assaults. And finally, we have cases of young people who have died of overdoses of drugs that were contaminated by fentanyl that they purchased through a social media platform.
The case that you're currently bringing involves a negligence claim, but also negligent failure to warn. What sort of warnings did Meta and Google give in your client's case? And what sort of warnings do you say they should give?
Well, they gave no warnings. Beyond that, they falsely represented to the public, to parents, to kids, that their platforms are safe when they know they're not. Beyond that, basic warnings are the synchronon of responsible corporate behavior. Parents did not know that children were being subjected to sexually explicit material online. Parents did not know that the platforms were designed to be addictive, nor did kids. Parents do their level best to try to control and monitor their kids' social media activity, but in most cases are thwarted by the misrepresentations that the platforms engage in, to provide a false sense of security to parents and kids, that the people that they're encountering on social media are benign and the encounters they're having are safe.
Just personally, how is it that you came to be focused on the area of social media harm and indeed to found a whole law firm focused on social media victims?
When Frances Haugen testified in the fall of 2021, showing what the social media industry knows its platforms are doing to young people, I saw a direct analogy to the work I've been doing representing asbestos victims over the last 25 years and decided that it was important to use the experience that I'd had as a product liability lawyer, the many defeats that I sustained over the years, as well as the few victories, and apply that experience to trying to ameliorate the carnage that is being inflicted on young people around the world through these unregulated social media platforms.
What are the similarities and differences between asbestos cases and this new suite of social media cases that you're running?
Well, there's some similarities. Asbestos was and is a public health emergency. And we know that among young people around the world, we are experiencing a epidemic of mental health harms. We are in the midst of a public health emergency arising out of the mental health crisis that our young people are experiencing. In asbestos, we also had a cause and effect relationship between a particular, in asbestos case, substance and a physical manifestation. In this case, the evidence is overwhelming that social media causes mental health harms in young people. It really can't be realistically denied. Finally, in asbestos, you had outrageous misconduct where the companies knowingly allowed dangerous carcinogenic products to be released on the market without adequate warnings. Well, here you have conduct that I think makes the asbestos companies look like a bunch of Boy Scouts. We're not talking about exposing industrial workers or sailors. We're talking about exposing kids to dangerous material, knowingly doing so in real time. In the case of asbestos, the companies knew that in the future, a certain number of the people that worked around them, the asbestos would develop disease in the future. The social media companies know, and their documents indicate, that kids in real time are developing very serious mental illnesses and in some cases losing their lives through social media. So we believe that they are very, very similar situations between the two and that the analogy is apt.
Matthew Bergman, thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
Thank you very much.
That's Matthew Bergman, founding attorney of the Social Media Victims Law Center, which is representing KGM in the case against Meta and Google that's currently before the Superior Court of California.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.